All right, let's get started. So my name is Greg Cosanza. I am a program manager on the VMM team. I've been on the team for about 3.5 years now, focusing on a variety of areas. And my latest area is networking. I've been working on that for about 1.5 years now. In these 3.5 years, I see a lot of familiar faces in the audience. So it's good to see that you're here interested in networking. One of my goals, as I've been working on networking, is to try and simplify it, make sure everybody is able to understand how to use it, because there's a lot of complexity that we've introduced over the years. One of the latest things we've done, and if you've been to the booths in the Microsoft section of the show, we've made this poster. So I encourage all of you, this poster is on VMM networking. It talks about, kind of goes through the workflow that I'm going to go through today in this session. And we have these on the show floor, and anybody, I have a stack of them up here. Any of you that come up and ask questions are welcome to have one, or anybody else until I run out. So encourage you to look at that. So if you have trouble following along now, the poster will hopefully help you when you get home. You can go through that. It has the workflow. It has a lot of the concepts I'm going to talk about here will be explained in a little more detail on the poster. So if you haven't realized it, this is actually part one of two sessions that we have on networking. In the first one, I'm going to cover what's new in SP1 just real quickly related to networking. And then I'm really just going to jump into how to set up your data center networking from scratch. So a lot of you, a lot of you, when you start setting things up in VMM, you come talk to me and you say, I don't know where to start. I don't know what to do next. So hopefully this will help you get through that process of understanding what you need to know and what you need to do that. And then part two, I'm going to talk all about how you use that basic infrastructure that you built and apply software-defined networking principles that we have in Windows Server and VMM in order to be able to really do a lot more with it and make your environment a lot more dynamic. And you can take advantage of a lot of the new technology that was introduced in Windows Server. So the second session is right after this one. We have about a half-hour break to head over there. The room is a lot smaller, so I don't know if everybody will fit, but the session is being recorded. You can watch it afterward, and definitely don't want to miss out on the second half. So real quick, as we worked on SP1 pretty much all of last year, and really part of our focus of SP1 was kind of broken up into two categories. We broke it up into connectivity and capability. So when we talk about connectivity, we really introduced these concepts of multi-tenancy in networking. And along with multi-tenancy, then if you have multiple tenants, you need to have them so that they're isolated from each other. You don't want one of your tenants being able to get to another tenant's network and know what they have there. When you have that isolation, then you have independent address spaces. And so your tenants can then bring their own IP address spaces into a host environment as well. And the address spaces can overlap, and there are no issues as far as any collisions there with address spaces. And then connectivity also means that if you move your VMs, you still maintain the same level of connectivity regardless of where they go in your data center. So there's been a lot that's been introduced with network virtualization that allows you to migrate your VMs across subnet boundaries within your data center and still maintain that connectivity. So that's very important. So in order to contain all of these, the properties of, connectivity, we introduced a new concept called a VM network. This is essentially the layer on top of what we introduced in 2012 with logical networks that really abstracts out, what a VM connects to. So now the VMs and the tenants, they don't need to know anything about the underlying fabric. They don't need to know how isolation is handled. They just connect to the VM network, and everything is handled by the fabric underneath it. Now, when we talk about capability, these are all the properties of this connection that your virtual machine has that affect how it behaves, not just where it connects, but how much bandwidth do you get? How do you keep VMs from sucking up and consuming all the bandwidth that you have in your environment, so you protect VMs from each other? What kind of optimizations can you take advantage of in the hardware? Security, so keeping some of the new features in the Hyper-V port related to MAC guard, router guard, those kinds of things. And then, of course, extensions. In Windows Server 2012, virtual switch extensibility was a huge new area, so that all falls under capability for the most part. Because there are a lot of new settings related to capability that need to be consistent across every host in your data center, we introduced a new concept here called a logical switch. The logical switch is really a central container, and I'm going to talk about this in detail as we go on. But it's a central container where you put all these settings. You define them once in your VMM server, and then you can apply it out to all your hosts and your VMs, and they all get the same consistent behavior over and over again. And if you change that logical switch over time, you can go out and apply those settings again to all the VMs that are affected by it, or even the hosts. So the other thing that we've been doing with SP1 is we've been really building our partner ecosystem. You know, we have a lot of partners, largely in the area of software-defined networking, that are involved in building switch extensions. They're involved in network virtualization, bringing gateways to market. Even load balancer partners, are supported in VMM. So we've got a very growing and healthy ecosystem that you're going to continue to see more coming out of that, in the years to come. So I'll be talking about some of these in a little more detail as we go through the deck. But really what we're here for is we're going to start from scratch and set up our networks. We're going to start with an empty jack that comes in. You'll probably have a bundle of cables, some sort of connection into your data center. And you're going to have lots of questions that you're going to run into as you start to set up this data center. You know, how do you provide isolation? What kind of isolation do I need? What are my next steps? A variety of things. And you want to make sure that everything's consistent and reliable. So the basic steps we're going to go through in this session, up front, you have to plan. You have to do some work to design what your network's going to look like. So I'm going to draw out, what a typical network looks like in a data center and how that maps to VMM concepts. This is when you'll really start to ask questions about what kind of connectivity do I need and how do I provide this isolation. After you have your basic network design done, then you can work on the hardware, figure out what kind of hardware do you need to actually support this design. Now, it's important here, though, because as you look at your hardware and realize what the hardware can do, you're going to have to iterate back on your design. It's going to be a back-and-forth process. But eventually, you'll come to, a stable design, stable hardware configuration, and then you can move on to the VMM setup at that point. Because at that point, everything's fixed. Now it's just a matter of creating objects in VMM and, getting everything up and running. So let's talk about the network design first. So you generally start with a number of inputs in your environment. I show those empty jacks. Those could represent the internet or could represent your corporate network. The internet could be, if you're a hoster, it's where your tenants are coming into your environment from. If you're a corporation, you could have tenants on your corporate network as well, but it's also where your admins will be accessing, the virtualization environment is through the corporate network. And these two will likely be linked somehow through a firewall that's really out of the scope of VMM's hands. Your corporate network now, of course, your admins have to be able to get to your VMM environment. They may have to also get to other servers in your data center. But all these servers on the back end are generally connected to a common management network. This management network is what they use to talk to each other. So it's how VMM will talk to SQL. It's how VMM will talk to the Hyper-V hosts. It's how OM will talk to the Hyper-V hosts. You have this data center back end network. It's used for management. Kind of goes everywhere in your data center. You don't have to expose it to your corporate network. Some customers do set up routes between them. It's really up to you at that point. Now, your Hyper-V hosts, they'll have a number of other networks. And remember, these don't necessarily represent physical networks. They're a logical breakdown of what kind of connectivity you're going to need. Your Hyper-V hosts, they're going to need networks for live migration, cluster, and storage. So you're going to apply the necessary quality of service to make sure that your live migration doesn't saturate the network, keep your cluster heartbeat from working. So they're going to have their own set of networks as well. And then ultimately, it's all there so that you can have tenants in your environment. And they're going to have their own networks, too. You want to be able to give each one of your tenants, whether you're an enterprise or a hoster, you're going to want them to have their own networks so that they can do deployments, test out their applications, deploy their applications without impacting others. Those tenants will need to connect to a gateway to get out of the internet. That is generally a component in a traditional network that's out of the scope of VMM. If you're using VLANs, you set those up as much the same way you set up your routers and switches. And you have also generally some DMZ and other infrastructure that's out there on the edge of your data center. And then you'll want to provide self-service to your users. You would do this through a very descriptively named Windows Azure Services for Windows Server. It's the latest self-service portal. It gives you the Azure experience. It's really the direction we're going in as far as is enabling self-service for the Windows Server and System Center components. So this is essentially what, the types of networks you want to draw out. You can use Visio, you can draw it on a napkin, but you need to get to this diagram, so you need to know what everybody, needs to connect to. And your diagrams will get more details. You start to add in, okay, now where do I need separations for broadcast domains? What boundaries do I have there? But the main question you have to ask before you can do that is, how do I provide these different types of, these different networks? Because, these networks here essentially represent isolation, whether it's for quality of service or security boundaries. And there are generally two types of isolation that you see here, or two categories. One is your data center. These are your networks that don't change ever, really, after you set it up. Your corporate network, your management, live migration cluster storage, you set those up once, and then you don't want to change those while your VMs and your hosts are running. You can add to them. You can add additional VLANs, whatever you need for those. But you're generally not going to change what's already in place. The tenants, on the other hand, are very different, right? Tenants come and they go constantly. You don't want to have a very rigid infrastructure for your tenants. So you'll likely want to look at a different method for isolating them than what you may use for your data center. So what are the building blocks you have to work with in VMM and Windows Server? Of course, you have physical separation. You can have two physical switches that your hosts have two or more adapters connected into, and that'll maintain physical isolation across your network. That gets very expensive very fast, makes it very hard to wire your data center when you have all these wires going around. So we're not seeing that used as often anymore. Still, sometimes in hosted environments, there's still regulatory requirements around having some physical separation. Next types of isolation you have are the layer 2 technologies. So you have VLANs. It's a very well-known, understood technology that I think, is anybody here never used a VLAN before? Yeah, okay, so one person. Okay, I'll talk to you afterward and explain it in a little more detail. But for the rest of you, you pretty much know what VLANs are. There's a variation on that called a private VLAN that, a lot of you aren't as familiar with. So private VLANs essentially establish pairs of VLANs, a primary and secondary, with the idea that you can reuse the same address space, you can reuse the same VLANs, but have multiple isolation boundaries within, a single pair of VLANs. That's another method of doing layer 2 isolation we support. And then, of course, the new kid on the block is network virtualization. This isolates through encapsulation. As the packets go out on the wire, their original IP headers are wrapped in a new header that that is aware of the isolation boundaries and the different tenants or the routing domains that exist on your network. So I'm going to talk about all of these in a little more detail now. VLAN isolation, so for the person out there that doesn't know what it is, well, here it is. Essentially, layer 2 boundary limits your broadcast within a single domain. There are pros and cons to them. The main pro is that it's very well understood, very mature technology. All of you use them. You're going to continue to have to use them for a very long time. But there are limits. Does anybody actually like using VLANs for your data centers? Yeah, no. So there are limits, right? They're inflexible. You can't have very many of them. You're limited to 4,095, but you won't even get close to that. You can't migrate VMs between these VLANs unless you have network virtualization on top of it, because your VMs are essentially tied to the fabric, and your machines are tied to that fabric that the VLAN defines. So there are reasons why you don't, you want to move away from VLANs in certain cases. The answer to that rigidness, is in the form of network virtualization. This is really what gives you the separation, right? You start with a physical network, the same network you have today. You can have multiple subnets for your hosts, multiple VLANs. You don't need any new hardware for it, except for the gateway in the middle there that serves a purpose, which I'll talk about in a minute. But the idea with network virtualization is that you can build these isolated networks on top of your existing fabric. You can do it, have multiple networks, production networks that go through a gateway, development networks that stay isolated, and multiple of those as well. So I'm going to talk about these in great detail in the second session. But the basic technology is that, each customer essentially gets their own address space that they get to define, and they get to define their own routing domain. This all lives on top of the physical address space. So your physical network essentially stays the same. Your routers and switches all act on these packets normally. When a client wants to actually go and request some information, my happy packet comes out of the client machine, goes through the gateway that actually encapsulates it for the first time as it enters your data center, and this encapsulation then knows what the destination is and sends it to that server. Server responds. Hyper-V network virtualization re-encapsulates it on the way back, and then at some point, it'll go back out onto a physical network and get the response back to the machine. So that's really the high-level explanation of what network virtualization is. Now, PVLANs, these are, you know, as I mentioned, I give you a brief description of what they were, or what they are. They're actually multiple modes that a PVLAN runs in. The main idea is that you have a number of client machines or servers that need to get out through or access a common infrastructure. The common infrastructure runs in promiscuous mode, whereas all of your other machines that need to remain have isolation boundaries, you know, live down in the secondary VLAN. And the switches are configured to only allow the packets to go from essentially secondary to primary and vice versa. So the promiscuous machine can talk to anybody. Your isolated machines can't talk to anyone. And your community machines can talk to each other and the promiscuous one, but not to any of the isolated ones or any other communities. Now, a thing to remember, one thing to take away from the slide, VMM can create PVLANs, but only isolated type. So that's the green ones in the bottom left corner. So we can create VMs that are isolated PVLANs. They can talk to the promiscuous infrastructure, but that's it. You can still get some equivalence of community if you use network virtualization on the back end. So you apply two vNICs to these VMs, have a virtualized network on the backside, and then now these isolated VMs on the PVLAN side are isolated from each other, but on the backside, they can talk to each other. And this has the advantage of you can actually add additional servers onto this network, and they can all talk to it and stay isolated. So where should you use what? And generally what we found is VLANs are still the best thing for infrastructure networks. That's not going to change. You know, you have to have a basic infrastructure that your switches understand, it can get everything bootstrapped, and stays rigid, essentially, from then on. You see a lot of customers want to use PVLANs for load balancer backends, so you get some isolation between all the dynamic IPs on the load balancer. And then also for internet-facing machines. You know, there are other scenarios that you can think of. These are a few examples. And then really the direction we're going for tenant networks is to use network virtualization. You know, because that really gives you the dynamic behavior of being able to create and tear down these networks without actually having to go in and create your switches and get your network admin involved. So there's one other thing I want to talk about, you know, and that's no isolation. There's still a mode that you can run a VM network in that gives you direct access to the fabric network. This is primarily intended for admins, so that they can get to the infrastructure. You know, if you have VMM and a VM, it's going to need to talk to the Hyper-V hosts, so you can attach those to a no isolation network. If you're upgrading from VMM 2012 to SP1, well, in 2012, you had no VM networks. Everything was directly connected to the logical network. So when we upgrade, we automatically convert those to VM networks with no isolation. So those VMs will continue to run and fit the new model of VMM. And then you may also have a shared internet network that, you know, that's shared by all the tenants. That could actually be just a direct pass-through as well. So any type of really shared network can be a pass-through. Last thing I want to talk about in the design phase of the session is talking about address spaces. Who defines what? Because each of these networks are going to have an address space that you're going to have to assign to it, essentially. Your corporate IT will in the corporate address space. The internet address space, you know, these internet routable address spaces that are getting very expensive, you get those from ICANN. Your data center, if you keep it isolated, you know, the data center admin can define those. And then the important thing to remember, and a lot of people forget about, is, you know, in a hosted environment, the tenant is who defines their own address space. So they'll get to define whatever they want, needs to stay separate from the fabric. Now, all these address spaces in VMM can be DHCP or static. There are certain cases where you'll have to use static addresses and a few cases where you need to use DHCP. And we generally support IPv4 and IPv6 equivalently throughout the product. It's actually one of our requirements to ship is that, you know, IPv6 is supported. All right, so let me talk a little bit about hardware considerations. You know, what do you have to think about when you're actually putting the hardware of your host together that are going to be used with VMM? There are a few technologies for you know, optimizations that you can get in your network adapters. First one I want to talk about is SRIOV. This essentially gives your VMs direct access to the hardware with some trade-offs, of course, as always. essentially by doing that, you're bypassing the virtual switch. VMs are going straight to the NIC, so you lose a lot of what's actually available in the switch. The other thing is you have to know that you're going to use SRIOV up front. So you have to create your virtual switches with SRIOV enabled. You can't enable it later on. You can then pick and choose which VMs actually use SRIOV or request it. But up front, you have to create the switch with SRIOV enabled. VMM does support enabling SRIOV. I'll show you the checkbox when I get to my demo in a few minutes. But there are some limits. Our intelligent placement algorithm today isn't aware of SRIOV. So you can migrate a VM that has SRIOV support on one host to a host that doesn't support SRIOV. You can live migrate it. The VM will continue to get its network connection, but it'll lose the optimization when it lands on the destination if that destination doesn't support SRIOV or it's out of virtual functions. So it can't actually, even though SRIOV is there, it can't actually enable it. But we do support it. So as long as your environment, your clusters are consistent and have a consistent design, then generally SRIOV works fine in a data center. The other hardware technology I want to talk about just for a minute is RDMA, so Remote Direct Memory Access. This is also known as SMB Direct. It's basically a technology for accelerating SMB3 transfers on the network. The reason why this is important, why I want to call it out here, is because there are some significant limits, trade-offs that you have to make when you use RDMA adapters. You can't create a virtual switch, and you can't do teaming. So if you have RDMA enabled, you really basically can't connect VMs to those NICs. You can use the networks for other purposes, host functions, live migration, management, and clustering, but you have to be really careful to make sure that you don't saturate that network so your clustering doesn't lose its heartbeat. The basic host configurations that you're going to make, with VMM, you have a few options, right? Traditionally, you've had what's called a non-converged network. This is where you have essentially a physical adapter devoted to each function in the host. And that was so you could apply the necessary quality of service to each of those adapters individually. And then your VMs would generally get their own. Nowadays, they would be 10 gig adapters. And then you can team them. Of course, that doubles the number of adapters. So you end up with a lot of adapters and a lot of wiring to do. As 10 gig adapters are becoming more common, we're starting to move to a converged infrastructure. Right, so the idea is that now all these different functions share the same adapters. So you break off these functions within the guest operating system, and the operating system then handles applying the quality of service and funneling them and applying them through VLANs to keep them separate on their separate networks. So a common way to do that still today is you have the physical separation of the your infrastructure networks, and then you have your VM networks, your virtual networks on another adapter. And then another way of doing it is also to actually move those adapters over to and attach your live migration cluster and management as vNICs directly onto the virtual switch. So now the parent partition has these vNICs that connect to the vSwitch, and then all that traffic can go through the same adapters as the VM traffic. You generally would use VLANs to separate the host functions from the rest of the VM functions. Your RDMA adapters in this case would just be dedicated to storage. And wouldn't be used by VMs or any of the other host functions. There's actually one other option in the middle for option one, a variation of that, which is to actually use two virtual switches. You have a virtual switch on the left for just your infrastructure, and a virtual switch on the right for just your tenant VMs. Because one of the limitations of option one is that your management network can't connect to a VM. So if you want to put VMM on this host for option one, you'd either have to expose your management network through the tenant side, or you have to create a virtual switch on the left side. The other limitation of option one is that we can't actually, through the VMM console, we can't create that if you're using our host deployment or even our host properties. We only support creating host vNICs that are on a virtual switch. Now, once you have all these, that your basic host configuration understood, that's kind of where VMM's knowledge of the network ends. Other than what you enter into VMM based on what subnets and VLANs you have that those hosts are connected to. But really, there are a lot of switches and edge devices that you'll have to think about, but it's really what your network admin's role is today. All right, so let's get into the VMM configuration. The main reason why I wanted to show you this is because these switches is that's where all your VLANs and your subnets essentially live, right? So you need to talk to the person that's setting these up and make sure that you're in communication to get these configurations right, because you're going to need to enter these into VMM as part of the next step, which is the VMM configuration. So the primary concepts we have for the configuration of VMM are logical networks, which we introduced in our 2012 release. They essentially are how you model the physical network in VMM. So you define you basically take your router configuration and you apply it within those logical networks as subnet VLAN pairs. Each of your sites within your network, your groups of hosts, can have groups of subnet VLAN pairs that you can then assign as a group to your hosts. And it's also a container for address pools, because once we know what subnets you have, then we can apply address pools to it, and we can allocate addresses to your VMs and your different VNICs out there. Logical networks are the foundation of what a VM network essentially lives on top of. It's what defines the type of isolation that a VM network will get when you create a VM network. So, you really have to think up front about how you create your logical networks. The other new concept we introduced now in SP1 is the logical switch. And this is really the central place where we want you to configure your virtual switch settings and, essentially the capabilities of your network. And I describe it with the four C's, as I call it. It's a central container. You get consistent port profiles, consistent extensions. Virtual switch extensions are something I'm going to talk about in part two. I'm going to go into some detail on that. But make sure that they're consistent. And then the last thing is it offers compliance. So, you want to make sure that all these individual hosts that you have out there don't vary from what's expected, their expected configuration is. And by having a logical switch as a central, essentially, repository of these settings, we can then compare with what the actual host has and flag it as saying it's non-compliant and then offer remediation so you can fix it. So now let's jump into a demo, and if the network's still working, we should be good. So what I'm going to do now is I'm actually going to start setting up a new data center or a new portion of my data center using VMM. So I've got a small environment here. Here's my new data center right here. I have it in its own host group. It's got one Hyper-V host in it. It's a very large data center, huge capacity. And this is what I'm going to be setting up the new network in. So I'm going to do that, and I'm going to start by creating my logical network. So the logical networks are really the first thing that you have to define in VMM, because everything else kind of builds off of that. I have a few that are existing. We have a capability where if you add a host to VMM and it has a virtual switch on it already, we'll create a logical network that essentially represents that virtual switch. We'll use the name of the switch. And that's how you will tend to end up with logical networks that get created, without any action on your part. You can turn off that capability in the settings. There's a way to turn that off. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to create a new logical network. And I'm going to create a logical network for my infrastructure network. So those networks that I described early on for management, clustering, live migration that I showed you in the design step, I'm going to now create a logical network that essentially contains those. So I'm going to call this my management network. And I'm going to mark it off to say that the network sites within this logical network are not connected. So when we introduced logical networks in 2012, we lived in this wonderland where a logical network was made up of subnets that can all talk to each other freely. And, you can connect a VM to one, and it can talk to any VM in another. But what we learned from customers, they started to use them, was that, they actually have different parts of their network, logical networks, that don't necessarily have the same level of connectivity. They have some notions of isolation. And in 2012, a lot of you tried to actually use logical networks as the unit of isolation, and that wasn't designed to scale in that way. So in SP1, we introduced this concept of sites that are not connected. So that really tells us that we can't treat them all as equivalent when our placement algorithm runs, wants to pick a VLAN and a subnet. We have to treat them as essentially individual networks within this whole logical network. So we're going to use that for our management network and for the cluster live migration and other networks that are in our environment. So whenever you set up a logical network, it's essentially made up as a collection of network sites. These network sites essentially define the connectivity of certain machines in your environment. So I'm going to create a network site for my management networks in rack 1. So I'm going to call it management. Rack 1. This is for my new data center. And now I'm going to insert a VLAN for each one of the management function I want on my network. So my first one I'm eventually going to use for host management. A second one will be for a cluster heartbeat. And my third one will be for live migration. So now it's going to create this logical network. It now has these three sites that got created within it. And now I'm ready to now create IP pools so that I can actually allocate addresses from those sites. Your IP pools, you don't have to have just one IP pool on your site. You can actually have multiple. So for example, if I want my management servers, so my hosts, I'll call them management hosts, to have a certain range of IP addresses. As we do bare metal deployment, we'll allocate addresses to the management hosts. I can create an IP pool for that. So it's my management logical network. I'm going to use my site for VLAN 5. I'm going to give this the range 1 to 99. You can specify your gateway, because you'll have to have a gateway in order if you want this network to be routable onto another network. So if you do want your management network connected to Corp, your corporate network, then you would have a gateway that would route there. It's up to you to decide what kind of rules you want for that. Same thing for DNS. You will have a DNS server in here as well. I'm not setting that up for now. These are all fairly standard IP settings. So I create a management host pool. I'm going to create a pool for management servers. It's going to use a slightly different range within the same subnet. Going to go to 199. So this would be if you're deploying VMM onto this VLAN. You could pick a range from you could have it pick an address from this range instead, so that you have some grouping. And then I left a little bit at the end. If you can have DHCP on these networks as well, it's up to you to have a DHCP server out there. But you have to make sure that the scope you define for DHCP doesn't overlap with any of the scopes that VMM has defined. Okay, and then I have two more to create. I'll try to do these quickly without doing a lot of talking. I have my cluster network, which is on VLAN 10, and my live migration network. Which is VLAN 15. Okay, so now I have essentially the fabric defined. Now there's one more thing we need to do, because these networks are actually going to be connected to virtual adapters. So a virtual adapter, whether it's connected to a VM or a host, can only connect to a VM network from VMM, because that's where we get the settings from to apply to that adapter. So even though these are going to be used for host management functions, we still need to create a VM network for that. And these VM networks essentially become just pass-throughs to it. So I'm going to go to the VM network section. Create a VM network for each of those. So I'm going to create a network for management. And now here is I'm going to select a VLAN. Essentially, by doing this, I'm giving this VLAN a name. So I'm naming it management. So now when I go to create my host, I'm not going to connect it to VLAN 5 and have to remember what VLAN 5 is. I'm going to connect it to the management network. And so we now have a name around this. And it'll automatically inherit the settings from the fabric for these VLAN-based networks. And this one's going to be cluster. That's 10. So what we're doing is essentially pulling these VLANs from the pool that's available on the VM network, or on the logical network. Last one is live migration. See that we're down to the last one. The other two have been used. So now I have a VM network for each of these functions that are going to be needed on the host. Now, this pool of VLANs, if a lot of you today are using VLANs for tenant isolation, you can actually use these pools of VLANs as tenant VLANs as well. So these VM networks that I just created now for host functions, you could just as easily use them for tenant assignment. You've given it a name, so now you can tell the tenant, here's your network. You name it based on the tenant. And then you also have access control as well. So for example, if I look at my management network, I can actually say which user roles can create VMs that can connect to this management network. So you've now applied access control to these VLANs as well. So this is what the VM networks give you on top of, you know, your basic fabric definition that you've defined. The one other type of fabric network that I want to create real quick is a PVLAN network. So I'm going to go back to my logical network and start here again. And I'm going to create a logical network. And this one's going to be for tenant PVLANs. And these tenant PVLANs are considered not connected networks, so you can't assume connectivity anywhere in the network. And you're going to tell us that they are contain PVLANs. And you're going to see something different happen now when I go to the network site. I'm going to add a site, as usual. You'll notice that there's an extra column here. This is where you define your primary and your secondary VLANs. So when I add my row here, I say that my primary, if I follow my notes, is 400. My secondary will be 401. And then I give the subnet that's shared by all of these tenants on this network, 10.4.0.0. And I can insert additional ones. I can have, if the 400 is the promiscuous side, then I can reuse that and go to 402. And so I can have different groups, essentially, of isolated PVLANs by doing that. And I'll go and I'll create an IP pool as well. They'll all share the same address space, so they'll all pull addresses from the same pool. You're only using one gateway address for all of these isolated machines, so you actually, it's an efficient use of your IP address space. So next step would be to create a pool and then still create a network on top of that. I spelled that wrong, but that's okay. Okay, so now when I go to create, I can create a VM network for this and then give tenants access to that, so I can create my... create my web server's VM network. If I wanted to put all my web servers on this PVLAN, here's my tenant PVLANs. And I get to pick which of these PVLAN pairs I use for that. And I get the same access control that I showed you before. So, you know, you get the same consistent experience at this point up to your tenants. They just see that it's a VM network. You probably want to name it so they know, some of the behavior about this VM network, but they're really insulated from what's underneath and how it's implemented in the fabric. All right, so let's switch back to the slides. I want to talk a little bit more about logical switches before I go and actually apply these network settings to a host. So I mentioned the logical switch, what the four C's of it, that what you get out of it, and it gives you some great advantages, right? And we have a lot of built-in automation into the creation of logical switch. So when we create a logical switch, or implement that logical switch on a host, and we create the virtual switch on the host, we'll also create the team for you. If you need a team of your adapters, we'll create the team. It's a single place for your data center, so there's some of all the stuff I talked to before. But there are a few reasons why you wouldn't necessarily want to use a logical switch. There are times when you may still want to use what we call now a standard switch. It's basically the same virtual switch that you get from the logical switch, but we don't have this management layer on top of it. And the reasons are essentially, you just want to quickly create a switch and deploy a VM. You don't want to go through all the overhead of a logical switch. You can still do that. We fully support that. The other reason why you need to think carefully about your logical switch is that live migrations will only take place within the logical switch. The reason for that is right now we can't guarantee that, if you migrate from one logical switch to another, you're actually going to get the connectivity maintained throughout that migration. So in order to play it safe for live migrations, we don't let you migrate from one logical switch to another just because you could lose that connection in the middle. But you can live migrate anywhere within the logical switch, even across clusters. Generally, we expect a very small number of logical switches in your environment, so you shouldn't have much of it shouldn't be much of a limiting factor for you. So there are several ways to actually configure your hosts, with their virtual switches, right? You have the option of creating a logical switch or essentially a standard switch. And for each of those, there are a number of different ways you can do it. Through bare metal deployment, we'll let you specify the logical switch you want to use when you create your virtual switch as the host, and we'll create the host VNICs and get the networking fully configured for that host as part of the bare metal deployment process. For hosts that already exist, you can go into the host properties, and there you can manually create, apply a logical switch to a host, and we'll create the vSwitch and then put the logical switch settings onto it and create the team as part of that as well. You can do this for a standard switch as well. You can go to the host properties, just say, I want a standard switch. Gives you roughly the same experience you would get from Hyper-V Manager. And of course, if you go into the Hyper-V Manager itself and create a switch, and when we refresh in that switch on the host, it'll appear as a standard switch on the host, because we don't know the settings that went into creating it. We don't know if we can map it to a logical switch, so we just show it as a standard switch in that case. So what I'm going to do now is I'm actually going to use the network settings that I just defined in my logical network and show you how to apply those with a logical switch. All right, so back to my fabric view. So the logical switch nodes in here under networking that you know, here's the main switch extension manager node. Oh, actually, I'm not talking about switch. Here's the main logical switch node. I don't have any logical switches in my environment yet. So this is what I'm hope to get out of this next section. You start with a port profile, defining what port profiles you need in your environment. And a port profile really defines whether it's a virtual port or an uplink port, which is the physical connection from the virtual switch out to your physical network. For each of these different types of ports, you want to know what kind of settings to apply to it. And so a port profile gives you a reusable container for these settings, so you can apply the port profile once, whether it's a host NIC or a virtual NIC on a VM, and you can keep reusing that over and over again. And if you ever go in and change the port profile, we can flag then the VM as being non-compliant and remediate it when you're ready. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to create a port profile for the uplink for my hosts. All these port profiles you see here, we pre-create out of the box with SP1 so that you have a set of virtual port profiles you can start to use right away. Some of these are for host functions. I'll use a few of these right now. And we worked with the various teams within Microsoft to come up with the right setting, for example, for cluster heartbeat and live migration. We use their recommendations for what sort of settings to use for those ports. Okay, so I'm going to create my port profile for my uplink adapter. I'm going to call this my RAC01 uplink. I'm going to say that it is an uplink port profile. And I have all of basically the same Hyper-V port teaming settings you would have available in the Hyper-V through the server manager are available here. Now, these will only get used if you actually create a team. You aren't yet saying that you're going to create a team. You're just saying if this profile is applied to a team, use these settings. The main thing that's in the uplink profile, though, is the connectivity that you're defining. In 2012, you would do this by going to the actual physical adapter and checking off, telling VMM which networks this physical adapter is connected to. Now, with the logical switch, you do it in this port profile. And now, instead of doing that on every machine, and especially in a cluster where you can make mistakes and get your cluster inconsistent, you can do it in one place and apply this port profile to all of your cluster nodes, and they'll all stay consistent. So here's the management RAC01 that I just created. This is the only one I'm going to use right now. When I talk about network virtualization later, I'll explain what some of these other ones are for. Oh, I'm also going to, I might as well do my tenant PVLANs as well. Okay. So basically what I'm telling now is wherever this uplink port profile gets used on a host, that host has this level of connectivity. And so VMM can place a VM then on that host, knowing that it can connect to a management network or the tenant PVLANs. Okay, so I've created my uplink, and so now I'm ready to create my logical switch. So I'm going to run the create logical switch wizard. We added a lot of getting started help to the beginning, so it gives you some idea of what you need to do to get started. I'm going to give this a name, my data center switch. And here's where you have to make your decision about SRIOV. You have to make that choice now because you can't change it later. So the host properties will have this disabled, or the logical switch properties will have this disabled after you create it. You can select extensions if you're using extensions. I have one available. I'm not going to add it yet. I'm just going to use all the standard settings that you get out of the box with Windows Server and VMM. So here's where you say that you want any virtual switch that uses this logical switch to have a team on it. Even if it's one adapter, we'll still create a team of one. And that really gives you the ability later on, if you add a second adapter, to add that adapter without affecting the connectivity of the VMs that are using the switch. And then what you have to do in this logical switch is say which of the port profiles you want to have available in the switch. Because, again, the logical switch is a container of port profiles now. So I only have one for my one rack. If I had a second rack later with different level of connectivity, I can add that to this logical switch at a later time. Port classifications, these are for the virtual ports. I'm going to add a few now. You can do these later if you want. You can add these at any time, even after the logical switch is used by a host, and we'll just make it available for new VMs that get created. But I do need it now because I am creating host vNix on my host. And essentially what you do is you say that for each one of these port classifications, I want to apply these settings when it gets used. And what that does is the port classification essentially acts as a global name across your entire VMM server. So that if you have different logical switches in different parts of your data center, let's say in one part you use a set of extensions, you can have a logical switch defined that have port profiles that use those extensions. In another part of your data center, you might not have these extensions. You know, in your test environment or your dev environment, you might not have extensions. In that case, you still want to be able to create a template that you can apply to either location. And so the port classification lets you do that. Your template will reference the classification. When you actually place it on a machine and see what logical switch is there, we'll then look up what that classification actually means. So that's what we're doing here. We're saying host management means use this host management port profile. There's host management. I'm going to do my clustering. And live migration is the last one. Actually, it's not the last one yet. It's the last one I'm going to use for the host. Live migration. And then I'm going to add just a couple for general VM use that aren't necessarily host functions. I'll add a medium bandwidth. Medium bandwidth. And a high bandwidth. And this will set the quality of service on the port then, depending on what's in these profiles. And if you actually open one of these up, you'll see it's basically the same settings you get from essentially in the Hyper-V UI for the vNix. The other thing you can do is you can say that if a template doesn't specify classification, you can tell VMM what settings to use for that port by default. So you can set a default port profile to say that if any VM connects to this and doesn't have a port profile specified, we'll use medium bandwidth for it. We don't want to suck up high bandwidth. We only want that to be reserved for people that really need it. So now I'm finishing the logical switch. So now I've defined my logical switch. Now I have my container. But now I have to actually apply this to a host, to the virtual switch on a host. And that's the next step. So I'm going to go up to my new data center, which is where I'm actually setting all this up. And for the first time, I'm going to go to my host and the host properties. See, I have a number of NICs in this host. A few of them are already in use, but I have two that are not used for any function yet. And these are what I'm going to apply the switch to. So I'm going to go down to the virtual switch panel. Now I have a couple of standard switches here. These are, gives you basic settings that you would get equivalent to Hyper-V Manager. But I'm going to do new logical switch now to say I want to create a virtual switch that uses these logical switch settings. I only have one logical switch, so I'll automatically pick that. And then I'm just going to say what adapters I want to connect to it for my uplinks. So I have my two unused ones. Oops, did I select the same one twice? That's number two and number one. Okay. And then I say what port profile. So the port profile now, I'm applying the connectivity to this. When I hit OK, which I'm not going to do yet, but when I do that, I basically told VMM, create a team out of these two adapters, and then attach that team to the VM to the virtual switch. Well, and then create a virtual switch and attach the team to it. I'm not quite done yet, though, because on that virtual switch, I also want to have some virtual adapters. So on each virtual switch, you can have one adapter, one virtual adapter that gets the management functionality. And what that means is that we will copy the basic settings, the MAC address, the IP settings, off of the first physical adapter added to the switch. We'll copy that to a VNIC. And that's if this is your only way to communicate with this host, is through the members you're adding to the team. We need to make sure that we can maintain connectivity throughout the whole cycle of creating it. So we'll copy those settings over, and that would be the way that we keep the connectivity throughout. You still have to tell us, though, what this adapter is connected to and also what classification to use for the settings. Okay, so I'm going to add two more, one for each of my other adapters. I'll do my cluster. I already selected cluster, and I'm going to use my cluster classification. Last one is live migration. Okay, so now when I hit OK, what it's going to do, give me a warning. If this is my only way of connectivity and I didn't do it right, I will have to go in through that band channel to fix it or log on the console directly. So what this is doing now is it's going out to the host, and it's going and it's doing basically everything I just said. It's got a pretty long list of tasks to do in its job. But when it's finished, you'll have a virtual switch with a number of VNICs. It'll have a team, and everything happened automatically as part of this process. So I can repeat this on every host over and over again. If I have a lot of hosts, I can use the host profile and apply that over again. The nice thing about using this uplink port profile, though, now that I have in the logical switch, is that if I ever need to add another VLAN to this host, I don't have to do it on every host that uses that profile. I just go to the profile once and add that VLAN. Now it'll be available on every node. All right, so we're going to let that run for a little while. Let me go back to my slides. So, your fabric now is ready to use. You're ready to create VMs that actually use this switch. You started from defining your logical networks so that we knew what your physical infrastructure looked like. You defined the VM networks that are accessible for VMs to VMs, so how VMs can get to some of that infrastructure. If you're doing tenant VLANs, you can get to those through those VM networks as well. But ultimately now, you're at the point where you can actually create VMs and apply them and use them in your environment. There are two, main things you need to do when you connect your VM. You need to select which VM network you're going to use on each VNIC, and you need to select which port classification you want to use. And that'll essentially apply the settings then in that classification so that your VM will get those settings. So you actually saw it in the VNIC, but the VM workload actually looks very similar. Whoops, too far ahead. So this is still running, so that'll probably run for another minute or two. Go back to my fabric. I'm actually going to create a VM now. Create virtual machine. Just going to use my hard disk. And when I get to the configure hardware panel and go to the VNIC, so here now I'm selecting that I want to connect to a VM network. And I get all the VM networks that are available that are essentially assigned to me. Now, as an admin, I get to see every VM network in the system. If I'm a tenant, I only get to see the ones that I either own, so through network virtualization I can create my own, or the ones that have been assigned to me. So these are the shared infrastructure ones that my admin has assigned to me. Those are the only ones that I would get to see. But I would get to pick the one I want to connect to. So in this case, I'll connect it to management. And what we'll do is behind the scenes, when we actually go to create this VM, we will apply the management settings to that VM. So we'll apply the VLAN 5, if you recall, that's what I selected. I want to use my web servers. This is my PVLAN, Nick. And then I want to select classification. As an admin, I get to pick all classifications, so I'm going to go medium bandwidth because I know that's available. And if the job finished, which I don't know if it did, we'll see if placement actually picks the host. The switch may not be finished yet, though. We'll see. Oh, there it is. So pick the right host because it knows that there is PVLAN connectivity on there because I added it to the port profile. It knows that, essentially that I can create a VM that connects to this. So I'm going to go through. Show you the last thing on configuring the settings of the VM. The last thing that you have available, and depending on what type of VM network it is that you're creating, there are a number of additional customizations you can do to the VNIC. In the case of, if you're using network virtualization network, you can actually override some of the settings of placement picks. You can pick a specific IP address. I know why there's no IP address here, because there's no pool. I didn't create a pool on this VM network. And go back and do that. Let's actually do that. I want to show you where you can actually enter in a specific address out of the pool. I'll do the management networks. This could be, let's say this is going to be an OM VM, for example. I would connect it to the management network. Go through placement. Placement should still work as well, because we told it that that network was available. There it is on my host. My adapter. Oh, one more thing I forgot to change. You have to tell it to use static IP. Oh, and you also have to be doing it from a template. So I went down the wrong path for this. But essentially, you get to the point of customization. You can do additional settings. You specify what address you want and override whatever placement picks. So I will move on from that. Okay, let's see what's up. So next, I want to talk about load balancers. We've had load balancer support. Make sure I spelled load balancer right. We've had load balancer support for since our 2012 release. It really hasn't changed much, but we don't talk about it very often, about how you actually use it. If you look at the diagram I drew early on, you'll have a number of tenant VMs, and even something like your Windows Azure Services for Windows Server behind a load balancer, because you want all of the users of that to be accessing it from a single IP address. And then you have a backend, and you don't want to allocate your expensive internet addresses for every node of the dynamic side of that load balancer. So you define a load balancer backend network generally that you pull addresses from for that. So the front end, it's essentially the set of virtual addresses that the actual client computers will connect to get to the service that's distributed out by the load balancer. It'll face the outside world. It's what, either if it's in a corporate network, your corporate network users will get to. It's what your domain, could be assigned to if it's a domain name. And essentially, you get one IP address for each tier of the service that you're defining, that you're load balancing across. On the back end, that's where you have your tier instances. So you can have one or more instances of a VM in a tier, all essentially serving the same function. Each one with their own dynamic IP that the load balancer essentially funnels the traffic to, depending on what the load is of and whatever health metrics it decides to look at. You want the backend network to be on an isolated network. You don't want to use up your address spaces that are used for anything else, because really the only traffic that's going through here is the traffic that comes from the load balancer to and from those dynamic IPs. The basic life cycle of a load balancer is used through the entire life cycle of a service in VMM, through starting with modeling. When you use the template designer, that's where you first specify you actually want to use a load balancer. Then when you go to deploy, that's where VMM will actually pick the load balancer that you get to use. That's where we'll create the virtual IP and the dynamic IP. The load balancer is involved in patching, because when you go to patch a VM, that VM is no longer available. So we have to tell the load balancer, stop sending traffic here. So we'll bring the server, we'll tell it, disable the server, patch the host, and then re-enable it. If you scale out, whenever you add a new instance to the service, we have to tell the load balancer there's a new dynamic IP here. So we tell the load balancer for that. And eventually you're going to delete that VM, and we need to clean up the load balancer when we're done. So your service template basically looks like this. You're not actually tying it to a load balancer yet. You're just saying what the requirements are for the load balancer in this service. In this example, the web tier. You use what's called a VIP template, or a virtual IP address template, to define what the settings will be that will apply to the load balancer. So it'll say things like, what port do you listen on? What are the health metrics? I'll show you all these in a minute, what your settings are for this. There are a few requirements, though, for using a load balancer in the environment. These networks that you connect to, both the back end and the front end, have to have static IP pools so that VMM can pull an address and actually set it in the load balancer. You can't use DHCP here. We also don't support network virtualization here yet. Load balancers will need to be network virtualization aware in order to understand that there's a difference between the customer and provider IP address space. So you still have to use essentially traditional networks for the front end and back end of your load balancer. The other thing to keep in mind, if you're using NLB, we have support for Microsoft NLB in the box. On the VNix for the tier, so in this case the web tier, you also need to have MAC address spoofing enabled on that VNix so that because NLB requires that. So then we actually go to deploy this service. You're going to turn those tiers into actual VMs. So if you just have one VM, no matter what, we always allocate one virtual IP from the front end. And then we allocate a static IP from the back end, give it to the VM. And then we tell the load balancer, here's what address to use for this VM. So now the load balancer knows when a request comes in, send it to this VM. And then we can repeat that over and over again as you scale out the service or we deploy new VMs in that service. These VMs can all talk on a backend network still to talk to each other, you know, not the load balancer backend, but their own service backend. This backend network can use network virtualization. So that's a great way to let, you know, these front-end facing tiers talk to back-end tiers as well in an isolated way. So I'm just going to jump in real quick into my demo environment and show you a load balancer in action. Okay, so I'm going to go down to my library. Actually, before I do that, go to the fabric. So I've already in advance added a load balancer to my environment. In the box, we ship NLB, so this is always available. But we also support load balancers from anybody that ships a provider that plugs into VMM. So F5 has shipped a provider for VMM. Citrix and Brocade have all shipped providers. So we can talk here in this example to a F5 Big IP and configure that. So I've added it to VMM. Next thing I need to do is I need to create a VIP template. So I'm going to create one. I'm going to delete this one from when I was practicing earlier and start over. I'm going to create a new VIP template that's specific to the F5 load balancer. You have a choice. You can say, I want this to be generic to apply to any load balancer, which gives you the most flexibility, but also limits your settings. So now we can't do anything that's specific to a particular model of load balancer. So I'm going to call this my F5 web server. I'm going to say that my virtual IP is on port 80. I want to listen on port 80 with that IP. Here's where I select generic or specific. So here I want to pick that this is for a specific load balancer. Protocol, persistence, all the basic load balancer settings. These settings here, the load balancing methods, we query from the provider. So it's the plugin. So we'll talk to the big IP, find out what it supports. And then we can also specify health monitor, so we can tell the load balancer to do its own probing to figure out which nodes are alive, so that it can automatically, if a VM crashes for whatever reason, it can stop sending traffic to it. And then I finish with that VIP template. So now I'm ready to go and create my service. I'm going to go down here where I create my service templates. I'm going to create a service template. I'm going to start off with a blank service template, and I'm going to just call this MMS demo. Start from scratch. I'm just going to create a one-tier service for, let's say, a web server, for example. And so I'm going to start by adding in a load-balanced web server template. So this template just contains Windows Server. It would also contain whatever applications. You do whatever application customization you want to do as part of the service, which I won't get into here. I believe there's another session being done by Kurt Scher on the VMM team that will cover this, how to do general service deployment. But there are a few things you need to have in this VM template. So that's why I pre-created it. You need to make sure that, well, so I pre-connected it to the load balancer network. So this is the load balancer backend, and I selected static IPs already. And of course, if I was using NLB, then I would have to enable max spoofing. You can see down below in the service template designer, we already showed it connected to the load balancer network, but we're not done yet. We have to actually say that we want to use a load balancer in front of that. And when we do that, we drop in the load balancer and the server connection and the client connection. The client connection represents the address, the virtual IP side of the load balancer, so where a client computer will be accessing the service from. Service connection is what actually connects you to the dynamic IP end. It's what connects you to the server. So you just draw a line there to connect that. And then I have to tell the designer what the client connection is connected to, so I have to add a VM network now. This one is just going to be on my corp network. Select my corp network, or actually I'm going to do my Contoso network. And then I'm going to select which VIP template I want to use for this. This is essentially what will define how we're going to configure the load balancer. So remember, I put port 80 in here, so we know that we're going to tell the load balancer, listen on port 80 for whatever virtual IP we assign to it. We got server connection back to the load balancer, so I think we are ready for action. validate, and then configure the deployment. So now we're actually going to go deploy and give this a name, MMS service. Let me just pick a host group. Since I'm full admin, I can do that. So we're going to run. So placement sometimes needs to think about it a little bit harder. So I refresh and actually look at what the rating is. Should pick a host for me. There it is, host 01. Refresh it one more time. There we go. So pick the right host. This host 01 is connected to Logical Network. So now I can deploy, and what will happen is we'll go out and we'll configure the load balancer. We'll find that there's a big IP available on that host, and we'll do all the configuration of this service. The one thing I didn't show, I have it on here still, can I do the instances? Well, let me go ahead and deploy it. So this is going to take a while, so we're not going to sit here and wait for it to finish. Whoops, didn't want to minimize that. If you do want to scale it out, you have the settings available in the service template to scale out that instance. Whoops, not here. Open up the designer one more time. So here you have your settings of how many instances you want to start with and how many you want to finish with, or what you want to have available right here. So we just said deploy one instance of this VM. If I wanted to actually use the load balancer to spread the load, then I'd define a higher instance count. Okay. All right. With that, to be continued. So we have part two coming up. I saved some time. I have about 10 minutes in this room for questions. In the event you're not actually going to the next session, I want you to have some opportunity to ask questions. I have the posters that I showed you at the beginning. So if you ask a question, you're welcome to have a poster. Or if you just want to come up and get one, you can do that too. These are also available in the VMM, or actually all of the Windows, the Microsoft booths in the show floor. So you can go and get one of these from anywhere you want in there. So hopefully I'll see as many of you as possible in the next 30 minutes.